Laura is the face in the misty light.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the crew here, the boss John Roering, Mike Malott, Jack Spencer, and Jacob Kanzler. And this is our post-Republican convention podcast. Jack, you and I were both at the convention this past weekend. And who was one of the first people I saw as I was walking down the convention hall was Bill Schuette. And he had his coat on and looked like he was ready to go.
Did you ask him why he was there?
Yeah, well, he said that he was at the 4th Congressional Caucus there on Friday. So on Friday, I was there, and Friday's the day where they have their congressional caucuses, all 14 of them, and they elect their chairs, and some of them are very, very quick, like the 3rd Congressional Caucus, where Terry Land was the chair, and it was pretty much by acclamation. And they didn't even have time for the people to give their speeches and so forth. It was over practically before it began. And then some, like, go on for a long, long time because they have contentious races and whatever. But as it turned out, Bill Schuette was there to thank the 4th Congressional Caucus for all their support for his gubernatorial run in 2018. So I got there at, let's say, maybe it was 10 minutes after 7 when I got in front of the 4th Congressional Caucus. He already had his coat on with Cynthia at his arm, and they were heading out the door. So he wasn't hanging around for long. So I was able to get 1 minute with Bill Schuette as he was heading out the door. Let's go ahead and listen to this audio. You can hear the conversation.
And Cynthia and I are excited about the opportunities ahead and feel real good about things.
Yeah. What do you think of what Whitmer's done so far?
You know, I'm tonight is Laura Cox's night. I'm not getting into that stuff right now.
What do you think of Laura Cox?
I think Laura Cox is going to be a terrific state party chairman.
Do you really? Why is that?
Yeah. I think she's got the experience. She has the right political philosophy. She's grassroots oriented, works hard, understands the significance of messaging, organization. I think she'd be a great leader.
What are you going to do anything on the Trump campaign, or is that...
Well, the number one job of every Republican in Michigan is to make sure that we reelect the President of the United States.
Okay. And then if you play a role... Is that yet to be seen, I guess?
Oh, yeah, I'm not worried about that. I'll be involved. I mean,
are you going to let him be involved?
Of course. I knew that going in. I've known him almost my whole life. So.
Yeah.
So Bill Schuette was obviously not the focus at this convention. It seemed like the focus was John James, because Laura Cox, who was running for state party chair to succeed Ron Weiser, had John James is like her person who was leading the charge. And if you want to hear a little bit of that stump speech, I was in the 10th Congressional Caucus when John James came in, and we can hear a little bit of John James pumping her up and then her quick sales pitch to the delegates.
But we're not going to do it with just a hope and a prayer, though we need hope and prayers. We also need to execute each and every single day. We need to get the most out of the people around us. We need leadership. We need vision. We need passion for service. And we need someone who exhibits it all. We need Laura Cox. My friend Laura Cox has been hard at work in the service of this nation and in the service of this state for the better part of her life. And I will tell you, she will dedicate her time, her energy, her passion, and her enthusiasm to this state as our chair. Please join me in welcoming our next chairwoman, Laura.
I don't want to
forget anybody, so I'm just going to only name two. But I really want to tell everybody, it's so important that we unify and we get energized and we deliver Michigan for Trump. Don't you agree with me?
Yes.
They realize how important it is to have a strong leader leading Michigan so that we can deliver those electoral votes for his re-election. Isn't that so important?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And with your help and your energy and your hard work, we will be able to do that together. Do you guys, are you guys with me on this?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to belabor the point, but we need to focus. We need to get redirected. And you know what? The campaign starts tomorrow. Is that true?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We need to beat down the Democrats. We need to make sure that we maintain the majority in the state house. And why is that important? Because if we lose the state house, then we have no way to hold the feet to the fire of that crazy governor, Governor Whitmer, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. What about all the things that Dana Nessel's doing? We need to make sure that we can call her to the carpet as well as Benson, and she draws the lines. She draws the lines that are going to pit state reps against each other. We don't want to let that happen, do we?
No.
So we need to work hard, and with all your help, we will be successful in 2020. I appreciate your support tomorrow. I want to lead this party so we have victory for President Trump up and down the ballot in Michigan. Are you guys with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
As you can tell, Laura Cox was maybe trying to make John James feel good there by saying, oh, we want him to stay in Michigan anyway, so he didn't get that job in Washington, D.C. So, but John James, it seems like now, is the face of the Republican Party going forward. We found out later, Jack, that she thinks that she has somebody that she'd like to have for U.S. Senate. But John James is the face of the Republican Party at this point, I think is a fair way to put that. What's your thoughts on that, John?
Well, I mean, he made that race more competitive than a lot of us thought that he was going to a year ago. But, you know, and he's been considered, you know, he was considered for UN secretary, like you know, was mentioned in the speech. And, you know, I can completely understand. He's got a lot of energy, and it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But
Jack, let's talk about where the Republicans are right now. What was the sense that you got talking with folks on Saturday about where they feel like the Republican Party is going to go as they head into 2020?
Well, they always try to make it sound upbeat, and I wouldn't necessarily say that's not so in a way. But, I mean, my sense is, look, they saw what happened in November. Bill Schuette actually got way more votes than gubernatorial candidates usually get. However, it was, of course, a closer to a presidential turnout year than it was a usual midterm. And that's why he still lost anyway. And I think that they're kind of like, okay, where are we on this? Is this going to be a bounce back with Trump running as president? Is there going to be some of the funding is going to come out more equally than it did this last time? Sitting there watching to see, okay, what's this going to be? Is we going to be drowned again in the money coming in from outside? Or is it going to be more equalized? And I think they're like everybody else going with President Trump, just kind of which way is it going to go in 2 years? I mean, I think they're like most other people. Every 3 weeks, your opinion of what's going to happen swings back and forth.
I think they're a little nervous. Did you get that sense? I mean, they saw what happened in 2018 with that turnout. And if something like that happens again in 2020 during a presidential year when that type of Democratic wave happens, they could be in real trouble.
Well, yeah, they could be. But they also, the message was, look, and they did bring it up, how much money, how much they were outspent by the Democrats this last year. However, they also were saying, well, there's signals. We actually outraised them in the last quarter, you know, being the overall national party. But, you know, they got to put a good face on it. But they have to be somewhat, I would think, tremulous, if that would be the right term, in terms of concerned about, okay, if we get drowned again in this money coming in from the two coasts, you know, how's that going to affect things?
And they don't have Ron Wiser this time to go fall back on. Ron Wiser, who was the chair last cycle, was able to raise a considerable amount of money. That's kind of what he brings to the table. It looks like he's going to be doing some work for the House Republican Campaign Committee this time around. But over at the state party, they don't have that this time. It'll be interesting to see what Laura Cox can do on that. You know, Ronna Romney McDaniel, before Ron Wiser was able to kind of bring people together. But when it comes right down to it, that's what the state party chair is there for. They're there to raise money.
Yeah, and so that's a question that we just don't have an answer to right now. But, you know, you can look at it the other way. You can say, you know, Trump won in 2016 by getting more, outspent more than 2-1. Is the president, is the sitting incumbent president of the United States going to get outspent 2-1 again? I don't know. I mean, it's such an unusual situation. Maybe he will get outspent 2-1. But make no mistake about it. All the focus in terms of the conversation, if you hear the tape of what Cox said, as everything else is, you know, the number one thing is winning Michigan for Trump. So I think that's a pretty clear understanding of knowing, you know, hey, if Trump does well here, the rest of us are probably going to do pretty well here.
You see the battle plan as campaigning for Trump and letting coattails carry the rest of the party? Is that the sense that you're...
The Republicans are suffering what the rest of us are suffering from in the Trump era. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know a lot. But I don't think his numbers are that much lower than Obama's were at this time. So it's a real... I mean, and with him, it's like, what's going to happen next? He could say something tomorrow that his numbers dip. He could do something in 6 weeks that make his numbers... spike. And again, you have this situation. He literally, here's a guy who won, being outspent more than 2-1. What happens if the funding is more equal this time? I don't know the answer to that. I'm not so sure anybody does.
You know what I found really interesting is this kind of combination of what we've always called the Tea Party movement, which really doesn't exist in the Republican Party now, hasn't existed probably for several years now, and the quote-unquote establishment, and how there is more of a working together relationship. And maybe it's because that old Tea Party contingent has infiltrated the quote-unquote establishment, or it's also a realization that there really is no margin for error for Donald Trump in Michigan. He won by the skin of his teeth here. I think they realized that, and they got a little lucky that Hillary Clinton got lazy and wasn't really liked here, and she didn't really do much comparatively here in this state. And so I think that there's this realization that, you know, we kind of do have to work together. And I think to illustrate that point is the 11th Congressional District Caucus. This 11th Congressional District Caucus has been kind of the epicenter of this push and pull between this Tea Party contingent that was represented for many years by Matt Maddox and kind of the establishment and who would get the upper hand. And sometimes the Maddox faction would win and sometimes the establishment faction would win, but they always seemed to be at loggerheads and they were never on the same page, except this year when Michonne Maddox ran. And as the face kind of this Trump Republican movement in this state, won unanimously. I mean, she had a nominal opponent who withdrew at the last minute, so she ran unopposed. And I think that's kind of a reflection that they realize, you know what, we are the Trump party right now, whether we like it or not, and we're just going to have to ride it. Good or for bad, we just got to ride it.
So you're sensing a little more unity in the Republicans this time around, which has been kind of the theme that there hasn't been as much in past years.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's because we want it or because it's a shotgun wedding kind of thing. Like, this is the bed we're all in, so we're all going to sleep in it and we're going to make the best of it. I think there's nervousness about the whole thing.
I think the Republican Party in general has a problem adjusting to the fact that arguably they've become the party of the middle class. And amazingly, they're having a terrible time making that conversion. It's amazing how much people's thought process and how what they're used to dominates everything. It amazes me when Republicans like to talk about tax cuts. And they'll do this convoluted thing about businesses don't pay taxes, the more money they have, they then can hire more people, which has been characterized by the Democrats for years as trickle down. Instead of, if you're actually talking about an entire table that reflects the American people in general, why not just say, you cut taxes because if the tax is too high, the companies don't pay them. They move their headquarters to the Bahamas, or they find loopholes, or they invest in tax shelters. That's something that even the liberals at the table can agree to. But those kinds of things that just seem to be mentally blocked from going toward a more consensus type of an argument for things. And I think that goes across the board. And I think you're still seeing that inside the Republican Party. You're having a real problem because you got to remember, Pete, we forget there were some of the things that Trump has policy-wise that he ran on were absolutely off the chart in terms of what Republicans believe in. The NAFTA stuff, the stuff on the tariffs, et cetera, et cetera. I think the Republican Party knows they have to go that direction, but I don't think it's an easy step.
All right. Well, I mentioned Michonne Maddox just a second ago. I was able to get a couple minutes with her at the convention. Let's go ahead and listen to that audio.
Tell me what you're feeling on the ground right now in regards to Trump.
I'm not kidding. The enthusiasm is like off the chart. We came back from Zenders in Frankenmuth last Saturday, hosted a Women for Trump event, charged women $25 a ticket because it's not cheap to eat at Zenders, and 179 women showed up. We had to stop people at the door and say, take their name and number and say, we'll get back with you. We're going to set up another one. I mean, people want... They're ready. They're ready for the campaign right now. I was fortunate enough to spend some time tonight with one of the Trump campaign. They have a field staff here from the Trump campaign. Ashley, I don't know if you've met her.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, she's over with the Cox campaign. So she's here, and she said, you know what? The campaign's ready to go. Like, today is the starting day, and it's on from here. So I just want to win back the 11th for Trump. That's my focus right now.
But it seems like in the 11th district, I know that Matt and yourself have been active in this congressional district before, but I've always kind of got nudged out of leadership roles. And it's interesting that now that you've been a part of the Trump apparatus really for so long, it may just be election by acclamation.
You know what? It's two things. He who has the most delegates wins, and we have worked very hard. We recruited over 1,200 delegates over the last 2 years. Michigan Trump Republicans was a big part of that. And you know what the message was? Do you support the president? You know, yes, I support the president. Well, then this is how you get involved. And I'm telling you, a third of the people in this room, in the 11th, these are people that we recruited. They're brand new. They're excited. They have no idea what's really going on. But they are really excited to get involved. And that's what we really need in the party is new blood. We need new people. We need Trump Republican people.
Because one of the things that I've heard before is that Trump maxed out in 2016, that's the ceiling, that he can't go any higher. Would you disagree with that?
I completely disagree, because look at the prosperity we're all living under. I mean, come on, if you're an African-American and you're looking at the lowest or the highest job opportunities that they've ever had, or if you're Hispanic, or if you're a union worker and you're seeing new building, new expansion, everybody's making more money, we're all getting more money, we're all saving money in taxes. So all of the people who were on the fence before or who weren't really sure that they loved this man, they didn't like his bombastic attitude, now they're enjoying prosperity. They're about to have safe borders, which is something we wanted, and all of those people are now going to vote for the president. Part of what we have to do is we need to get people, we need to have Trump back on the ticket. That's what we need to do. 50,000 people that showed up to vote for President Trump in 2016 in Macomb County did not show up to vote in 2018. That's a real number. That's an incredible number. I love telling that story because where are those people? You know what? Trump wasn't on the ticket. We need to reach out to those people. They need to know you need to be here.
What's your thoughts on Cox as a chair candidate?
Oh, I think she's going to do a great job. Like I said, the Trump campaign is here. They're 100% on board for her. I'm 100% behind Donald Trump. I trust him. I trust my leadership. I'm under his authority. And I think she's going to do a great job tomorrow. I understand people's frustration. I understand the protest vote. But Laura Cox is going to win, and we're going to move forward, and it's going to be great. But she's got a big job to do. She knows that. We're ready to roll up our sleeves and work with her.
Excellent. Thanks, Michonne.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Michonne Maddox. Now, this race for chair was actually closer than it probably should have been. I had one consultant tell me that this should have been a slam dunk for Laura Cox, but it was a lot closer than it should have been. Gina Barr, who is running, is, by all accounts, a very nice person, very religious, has done stuff for the party at kind of the ground level. But really doesn't have the connections to raise the kind of money that you need for a state party, and so wasn't really viewed as a real serious challenger. However, the Cox campaign ran a very aggressive campaign against her, did several flyers, including a couple negative flyers. And the one that caught the attention of the delegates the most was one that compared Laura Cox to Gina Barr as it relates to two of the big interest groups, one being Right to Life and one being the NRA. Now, Gina Barr ran for state representative in 2016 in the 7th State House District, which is in Detroit, where no Republican has any chance whatsoever of winning that district. It's got like a 93% Democratic base. So Gina Barr basically was on the ballot as name only. She was just filling out the ticket for the Republicans in case something happened or whatever. You want to have a name on there. So she wasn't actually running really hard, obviously. Like, no candidate as a Republican would run hard in Detroit. So she didn't get the endorsement of the NRA. And she didn't get the endorsement of Right to Life because she didn't seek it. But anyway, in this flyer that was sent out, it was noted that Laura Cox did receive an A grade or whatever from the NRA and was endorsed by Right to Life, while Gina Barr was not. Now, while such things, as this consultant described to me, such things as this can go over in a regular campaign with the regular electorate who may not be very sophisticated and think, oh, wow, well, then she's not pro-life or she's not pro-gun. But to the delegates out there, they felt like this was a low blow. Like, why would you bring something like that up? And why are you going negative in the first place? Because Gina Barr has no chance of winning. She's not the greatest candidate. Why do you have to go negative? And so there was this, I think there was this uncomfortableness out there. Like, you know what? We don't like the negativity. We don't have room for the negativity this year. We don't have room for error to fight amongst ourselves this year. If we're gonna win, it's gotta be all together any split and we're gonna fall apart. We don't need this. So they actually voted for Gina Barr, and the results were actually closer than they should have been.
So sort of given that reaction, how was the overall atmosphere for the convention? How was the media treated? Was there a sense of kind of heavy-handedness going on in the way the media was treated and the way this whole campaign was addressed?
I don't know about heavy-handedness, but I do think that they're really trying hard, like all political entities are right now, to control the message. I do feel like whether it's the state party or a gubernatorial candidate or any type of major candidate, state, national, that the goal is to control the message and the media and to report what they want you to report. I don't know if it's unique to the Republicans and what they want us to report.
Were you able to move around the floor freely and talk to who you wanted to talk to without being harassed?
Well, we'll go to Jack on that.
Well, I wasn't, and I made an error. I thought if I got there closer to 8:30, I wouldn't be one of the earlier reporters there, and you can kind of get lost in the crowd, so to speak. As it turned out, I was the absolute first reporter there, and I
good for you, Jack.
And I beat every. I could have slept another 45 minutes and actually come out better.
Because the convention started at 9 o'clock on Saturday.
Yes, morning. And so I ended up being the one who was okay. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Okay, now you can go in. I mean, it was here's the table you sit at, and that's where you're supposed to go. I kind of like to walk over it. No, you can't do that, et cetera, et cetera. To be honest with you, it's not as if it's not a little bit well known that, hey, don't be the first reporter to show up, because once that table's full, you got a lot more freedom to wander around. As far as the mood goes, no, I wouldn't say that the mood was any different than at other conventions I went to. I mean, let's face it, they put on the program, and if you're really paying attention, most of the delegates aren't even paying attention to the program. They're talking to each other or everything else. I don't know. You know, I got a headache from last night. I had too much to drink or whatever it is they're saying to each other. But yeah, there was this sort of this classic, if you were like I was, the first reporter there, one of the first reporters there, and this is what they've been told, obviously, ahead of time. Oh, no. They stay at that table, and this is what they do. That was very present.
So, Kyle, what kind of, Kyle and Jack, what did generate excitement at the convention? What themes maybe got people going? What speakers maybe generated buzz?
Well, I'll tell you, give me a couple days, I'll come up with something. I did not see anything that there was a tremendous reaction to at all at the part that I was at. But again, what I watched for the most part was a program where it looked to me like a large portion of the delegates were kind of drinking their coffee and talking to each other. So it really did not appear to be the kind of event where you'd even have a statement or something really making people react to it.
Did John James speak at the full convention?
No.
Who did?
Well, we had Tim Walberg was one of the main sort of master of ceremonies there. You had the national committee chair speaking. You had
Ronald Romney was there.
Yeah, you had Weiser. Shirky spoke. Chatfield spoke somewhat. A lot of things. Of course, there's kind of interspersed between what the people say, and then they kind of step off to the side, and then they have the thing that shows up on the great big screen that's mm-hmm. pre-done. It was that kind of a program. But no, it was not the kind of a convention where people are sitting there riveted in their seats watching what's going on, to be honest with you. It was kind of like being at a big cocktail party and there's something going on in the background.
As far as Congress people, I saw Paul Mitchell was there. I saw Jack Bergman, John Molinar. You mentioned Tim Walberg. I also saw Mike Bishop, for what it's worth, in the 8th Congressional District. Somebody who I didn't see, who I guess doesn't usually show up at these things, is Justin Amash, congressman from the 3rd District. And I don't know what kind of reception he would have gotten, John, if he had shown up, to be honest. I mean, considering the latest resolution he's put his name to.
He's just, you know, he's his own character, and he follows his own drummer, and good for him. And he seems to be well-liked in that district. So if he doesn't need to come to the state conventions, I guess he doesn't.
So when the convention was all over, I think we got the result that we all expected. Laura Cox is the new chair. She was able to talk with the press afterwards, and Jack, you've got some audio from that.
How do you appeal to an electorate that only 40% of Michiganders are with President Trump right now, and how do you win back the suburban women?
I'm a suburban woman for once. So I think that I want to be the face and the voice of the party, and I think it's really important. We're going to have a great track record that the president has, and I think when you talk to folks about all the things that he's done, he's accomplished, then I think that will bring the voters back, and we're really excited about that.
Are you expecting the money gap to continue that took place last time in 2018 with the Democrats spending way more money than the Republicans?
I don't think that there was that huge of a money gap, but obviously that's something that we're going to focus on as well.
How do you plan to appeal to more youth?
Messaging and how we message and how we get that message out is really important. We're talking about expanding and talking about different ways to get messages out, maybe by digital. We're going to expand that and focus on that. Just different ways to deliver media and information and make sure that resonates with the younger folks.
Do you think the president will have a harder time appealing to voters in Michigan? Do you see it as an uphill climb?
No, not at all. Here? You know, the president has a great track record. We're really proud of all the things he's accomplished. And I think when we talk about that to voters, they're going to talk to their friends, their family, and they're going to have something's going to resonate with all the successes that he has had. So I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. We're really excited. The president's really excited. Michigan is his pathway to victory, and we want to make sure we deliver here in Michigan.
One of the speakers talked about unity.
There's no problem. Unity, it's what we want to talk about, is focusing on the goal. Our goal, our task, that's what I want to make sure I deliver. And our goal and our task is to re-elect our president and then make sure that we re-elect Republicans up and down the ticket. That's what our goal is as a Republican Party.
Bill Schuette was fairly adamant during the midterms that the president was here to help him win. Of course, that did not happen. Are you concerned at all that perhaps Michigan has fallen off of the president's mind?
Nope, not at all. I speak with the president's staff on different occasions, and they're very interested in Michigan. They actually had somebody here this weekend to help support me. It's very important. Michigan is on the radar. It is his pathway to win, and we want to make sure that we deliver that in the Michigan Republican Party.
Do you have a vote total?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. I just don't know it. I have one in mind. We hope that we can convince them to say that. But thank you. Any other questions? Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to John and Jack, Mike and Jacob. And Jacob, I know that you're very glad to have been part of this podcast and not sent to the Board of Canvassers and then Horrocks afterwards to get us some popcorn.
Yeah, well, now we're without popcorn and cheese, apparently.
Cheese.
So remember the address here. If we need food, you can send it, you know. Make sure it gets here fresh because we may be snowed in here this week. So.
What did you want Jacob to pick up from Horrocks for you?
Pinconning cheese.
What? What is that?
Well, it's good cheese. I like it. And it's also named for a city in Michigan. So, you know.
Oh, Pinconning.
Yeah.
Oh, they sell it at Horrocks?
Yes. Last I knew, that's almost the only place left. You used to be able to get it at Meijer and Kroger and stuff, but I don't know. I don't know if there's a great Pinconning cheese shortage now or that's just eluded reporters, but no.
Do they sell on that big wheel? Or?
No, the ones I've gotten are little blocks. So it happens to be the kind I like. It's,
this is a giant endorsement for Pinconning cheese and Horrocks, which the canvassers have met at Delta Township Hall a couple times now in the past year. I think due to scheduling issues over at the Capitol.
No, I think it's because it's next to the freeway and it's next to Horrocks.
Yeah, and one time Norm Schinkel made an unofficial announcement, I think off the record, endorsing everyone to go to Horrocks while they were on, they were at like Ease for something. So
they could all get free coffee and then come back.
That yeah, or just enjoy all the other delights there.
Like Pinconning cheese and popcorn.
Pinconning cheese.
I think it's good that we're giving Pinconning its due. It's about time that we did.
Yes, and if more people here who are listening to this podcast go to Horrocks because of this, then they're so susceptible to advertising that, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe they ought to get a little help.
That's your public service announcement of the day from Jack Spencer. Thank you much. Thanks to AT&T for sponsoring our podcast. Until next week, I'm Kyle Moore. Take care.